Brian, what do you have this time for us?
Well, I have some puzzling, I must say, and interesting notes. They're still about crowds and power. I hope this isn't too disappointing that I'm sticking on this one book.
Yeah, that's
but,
good.
It's definitely an interesting case, and I know that this book came from, it was written in, I believe, the mid-60s, but or early 60s, or originally published then, but McLuhan, he read it late enough that, as we mentioned last time, he had used the phrase silent minority,
yes,
on silent majority, and he also has references to Watergate, and in one, and that's an interesting thing, and in one note, he notes exec as DO, so executive as dropout. So he's at least got that phrase rattling around in his head at this time. So I imagine he read it in the 70s.
That'd be 72, 73 is Watergate, and he wrote about Watergate as theater, global theater. So, yeah, you're right. Has to be 73 at the earliest.
Yeah. There's an interesting section, or last week I talked about this section where it's about, like, the sound of our own feet, and it's the first thing that humans paid attention to is to really determine different animals by their gait and the sound of their feet, and the sound of our own feet is one of the first thing that we listen to, and kind of making an art form out of the start walking, building up a whole bunch of walking in one place,
right.
Everybody all together building up a what Kennedy calls a throbbing crowd by sort of investing all your steps into one space. And what I find puzzling is that McLuhan multiple times in, it's funny about Crowds and Power, four different back pages, usually it's just the one back page and he's got a list of page numbers with little notes of what he finds interesting. In this one, there's four different pages with some repeats. And on two different back pages, he makes this connection between the page 31, or whichever one it is, 31 that has the sound of our own feet environment and the throbbing crowd of building that up, and connecting it to page 186 or 187, which talks about inflation. It's in, like, one of these notes, the 31, sound of our own feet equals rhythm invis env, for invisible environment, and then beside that just says 187 note. And then on 187, around the all of this inflation talk, he has the note, hidden ground, tribal war, referring back to this new, that our new environment is similar to our archaic revival of the audio, the sound environment, basically, ear world. And so I find it pretty strange. I'm not totally sure of the connection there, but
let me fill you in on that. First of all, he talks about the inflation happening in Germany in the 20s and 30s, and the German people look for a scapegoat. It was the information environment that was coming around them, and so that's when they started to target the Jews. McLuhan or Kennedy was saying that the reason it wasn't like specifically started off with hating the Jews. The grievance was directed at them after the inflation caused confusion. Now, McLuhan says that we live entirely by music. He says that in the 60s. Look at inflation as music, proven by this connection, the pulsing of the feet, the rhythm. Inflation is the extra wealth that's happening in software terms, imagery overload. That is a musical experience, the drum roll, and that's the tying of inflation with music. And then back to what Kennedy says as the stamping of the feet. So there's your connection.
And it's interesting because Kennedy and McLuhan underlines a couple phrases in this. Kennedy definitely describes inflation as being the same basic crowd urge to rapid and unlimited growth, but happening in the opposite direction, basically, getting weaker rather than stronger.
Yeah.
And actually, Kennedy uses the phrase, what is it that happens in an inflation? The unit of money suddenly loses its identity.
Its identity. Loses its identity.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And especially, and what especially loses its identity, Kennedy talks a bit about the magic word million. Million,
right,
has this real, as applied to money, has this real, you know, it's an iconic amount. It's less about the exact quantitative amount, and it's more a quality of, and it has this cosmopolitan feel to it. And beside that, McLuhan had written corp image or corporate image. And he's underlined millionaire a couple of times, that the millionaire has taken over some of the dazzling qualities of the old fairy tale king, Kennedy said. And so in, around this, and one of the other parts about the inflation that McLuhan underlined is the phrase, Kennedy says, what is wanted is a dynamic process of humiliation. Something must be treated in such a way that it becomes worth less and less, as the unit of money did during the inflation.
Right.
And besides that, McLuhan wrote Watergate and made another note saying, Watergate, deflation of center margin images, inflation of center without margin economy.
Right, and Nixon gets caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, crowd psychologically necessary operation of a constantly devaluing image.
Right, the increased images, the software images of musicians, rock musicians, and
right,
at that point. Now, you know what McLuhan recommended to Nixon for solving his dilemma of looking so pale and centralist? He said,
yes,
just grow a mustache or some sideburns. That's all you
right
have to do, Dick. And Dick wouldn't do it. So Dick went down.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's what he said. You know, you just have to, because everybody in the white suburban class, they didn't want to wear long hair yet, so they went for sideburns and mustaches, early 70s, and Watergate's in 72. So that was the first... Nixon didn't know that his image was way more important than his policies or whatever he
right
thought he was doing in Vietnam, and his image did him in. That's the bottom up. The top down is that Nelson Rockefeller was very angry that they released the dollar as a fixed exchange on August 15th, 1971. That's what
right
Nelson got him for. But there was other problems Nixon had, which makes it all complex and journalism too simple in analyzing what's going on.
Right.
Don't forget China.
Well, that was what was going on there. And China was mad, and Nixon went there, what's the phrase, with his hat in his hands and his humble Uriah Heep situation. Now, we got Ion working here.
He brought his staircase back to his library. It's great fun.
The staircase. Okay, so... okay, I opened the mic up here. I want you to comment a little in a point here at this inflation, stagflation. Beter, I think, is Dr. Beter named the phenomenon stagflation in his book Conspiracy Against the Dollar in 1973. But okay, so next, any more points on there, Brian, or on something else you want to mention?
I guess not, unless you know what McLuhan meant by there was a mysterious note beside the phrase, beside Kennedy's sentence. Inflation is a double devaluation originating in a double identification. McLuhan has underlined double devaluation and double identification, and beside it he wrote HWSW.
Yes, that's hardware software. The hardware is the money. You know, Kennedy's saying the money lost its identity in the hardware world, even though money is an image by that time. But maybe Kennedy didn't see it that way. And then the software deflation is the White House can't get any focused attention. And Spiro Agnew starts lashing out at the journalists and the intellectual snobs that were writing a lot of stuff because they didn't like Nixon's image. So Nixon's got double problems there, hardware and software deflation.
Yeah.
And inflation.
And Ralph Nader, Ralph Nader, Ralph Nader.
Yes, he was very big at that point. Ralph started taking making noises about that. And we're friends of
Barry Goldwater, Barry Goldwater, Barry Goldwater.
Yes, that's true. But I just want to add that we're friends with Jim Turner, and he was working with Ralph Nader in that period. And he said Ralph Nader, a core of them working, Raiders Naders, he said that they felt, some of them, that Nader made a mistake entering the software image warfare, and they left him. So we actually have some personal experience of what Nader did at that point. Because Nader wanted to stay active, and his hardware issues of the safety pin or the safety belt, whatever he brought in, the vehicle he corrected, he didn't have any more grievances. So he had to go after Nixon's image. So
yeah.
he was swept up in the software vortex. Nader was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next point. Hardware, software. You didn't see the hardware SW was software. You couldn't see that.
Yeah, for some reason that didn't occur to me. But it makes perfect sense with the other note McLuhan had put there, the Watergate deflation of center margin images and inflation of center without margin economy.
Right. And the economists are trying to link themselves with the wealth of free software that's happening. And McLuhan said that's what caused the problem in the 20s. The accountants couldn't track the wealth as radio created a flood of acoustic wealth that anybody had access to. So there was an identity crisis over what was money marking and measuring.
Yeah.
So it collapsed. Or Secretary of Treasury Peggy's relative, Mellon, maybe caused it. Maybe we could ask Ayn later which one was which. But the what's the other point? So money was let free. Nixon actually did the right thing by letting money float free and fancy. You know, information wants to be free. And that created a lot of the wealth of the 70s, 80s, 90s. But, of course, the accountants had an identity crisis. And they said, no, we're getting in trouble. And then Barry Goldwater, I guess, and the neocons come in demanding back to the gold and objecting to the excess. Excessiveness.
Yeah. This whole, I think a lot, I can't say I understand it or that I have any real solid insights necessarily, but I definitely find, because there's still news going on about the whole gold thing and what's up with gold. There's been all these kind of scandals in the past few years about...
Yeah.
Germany in particular wanting its gold back from the Federal Reserve banks or from the U.S. banks where it's being kept and being told that it can't have its gold back and not being given very specific reasons. And then just recently it was claimed that, oh, no, they did get their gold back in a very kind of secret process. They suddenly have it back, but then there were these parallel stories about how it was included in the story that they were very closely inspecting the gold they got back as if they were very suspicious of it, and disputes over people saying there's this much gold and other people saying there's that much gold has never been mined in the history of the world. What are you talking about? It's this gold thing is still very important to some people. And
okay, let me respond to that.
Losing its identity all over.
The Android meme helps everybody, resuscitates everybody for the average consumer, producer, consumer, you know, the wonderful things they get on their iPhone. But every meme gets recycled in the global theater of the Android meme. So gold and the economics of that, even though it has no reality in the present software situation, which Ian talks a lot about, it is an important meme, and that many people need that icon, the guys who identify with neo, let's call it neo-hardware lifestyle and identity, they require that meme. And it's medicinal for the Android meme to keep gold as a phenomenon going, as a meme. That's what you have to understand. In other words, the Android meme gives coverage to every meme possible. That's why we're going in every direction if you try to track it.
Right.
Does that make sense? You see the point?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going every way.
And it's always revealed.
So all the confusion comes from just that it's going everywhere.
Right. And did you say cold fusion comes from that?
Oh, just saying the confusion.
Oh, right. If you don't know how to track it. But there, any journalistic story like this gold thing, there's always a mystery, like whatever Swiss did in returning to Germany, whatever happened there, there's always undecidables or odd phenomena because on a virtual level it's not really happening. They're not really taking the gold, not putting back. And if they did, they use fake gold. See, there's always questions in every field, field now, because it doesn't make sense unless you know the figure ground of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask Ian about that. What would you say to refute what I just said, Ian? What would you add to what I just said?
The value of money is $1,292 an ounce on Hong Kong spot price right now.
And is that a meme? How real is that when push comes to shove about what one should do about the crisis in the economy? Well, is that an issue, that price?
Oh, no. That's just how much money it costs. Gold hasn't gone
right
up or down.
And what's platinum? What's platinum?
1360.
Right. So it's been higher than gold, like you predicted, for about 3 years now, right?
Two.
Right. Platinum is a new important thing, Brian. Now, look for platinum being discussed as an investment. Maybe it's not highlighted as much.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. It almost flips into all these puzzling confusions about gold that really stress people out a lot.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it ends up serving this great calming purpose of everybody can bug out about the gold and all the other important things can sort of slip by without having a lot of attention poured on.
Yes, every meme has great service as a service image and a disservice, and you can take either side. McLuhan used to say that in this disappearance of hardware values, you can either be outraged at it or just drift with it and go along. That's the two responses. And so most people are, if you're not outraged, you're out there partying, taking drugs, and if you are outraged, you're going to church. That's the dynamic in the West. You know what I mean? You become a born-again person, not necessarily listening to Alex Jones, but not believing the bankers and recreating local community under the religious institutions, or attempting to create. See, that's, you can be disgusted or excessively glowing. McLuhan used to say, from glow to glum and back again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the flip that Ion provides, or I assume still provides, this the shocking idea that radiation is good for you. Because that seems to be like a sort of a fundamental thing that everyone can agree on for a long time. It's like, well, we can all agree that radiation is, you know, bad. And like, if they're using depleted uranium in these wars, that's a bad thing. It's just a question of whether you want to pay attention to it or not. There's not much disagreement about whether it's a good thing. So it's a question of, because that's tied up in the gold thing, too, apparently. There are these stories of lots of gold being irradiated and gold
is
also
used for nuclear
weapons.
What, Ion? Hey. What'd you say?
Caveat emptor.
Right. Now, Dr. Beter talked about that in 86, that the only gold, this is when we were working with Hugh Sims Hildes, the only gold he says that was available was Marcos gold, because Marcos went down in 86, and he was desperate and released his gold, but it was radioactive for some reason. I can't remember why. Is there any truth in that, Ion, that there was some dangerous gold circulating? What does Ion usually say when he nods? We didn't say that, but he's laughing. He's laughing.
He just says, we didn't say.
We didn't say.
Or
right?
He laughs.
But he did say there. Mm-hmm. All right, now, Brian, that is a hot issue. Actually, economics, McLuhan said the bankers went into politics in the 70s. The average visually biased person or executive considers these kind of facts as what national security must protect. And so Ian is very careful when he goes into those areas, which are what other people would call the Illuminati conspiracy areas, that we cannot be seen to know too much. So actually, the old divisions of hardware and software, form and content, don't work anymore. Content is supremely important. And the basic facts of economic transactions on a secret level are the medium, are the hidden ground, and that's content. But content has merged with form, and we have to be careful. Ian has to be careful. It tries to be careful. It pretends it's careful on these key economic issues. So, again, we're quadriphenic. They got four levels there, pissed off, happy, concerned, and paranoid. You know, that's what the citizen has to be.
Right.
I was telling someone about our Coldplay move the other day, an old friend. He says, well, Bob, I don't know if I can make your funeral, but I am sorry, you will not topple the oil companies. It's no way, he says. No way. And he says, matter of fact, I'm going to start erasing any connection to you. I'm deleting all my emails to you. And we went into this sort of hilarious thing of mentioning everybody we knew, and when he started seeing them off, he'd know that Bob had blown it. So
Yeah, because you're not allowed to introduce a new energy source.
No.
I mean, they try to keep up this idea that it's all just we're waiting for American ingenuity to kick in to, you know, come up with a new solution, and then, like, you know, can find other people to remind you, like, no, it's all a drama of how new solutions have been come up with over the last, you know, half a century.
Yeah.
It's a drama of them not making it to market for one reason or another.
Right. There's a basic retrieval of tribal paranoia, just as the supposedly five pre-litter peoples were very afraid of thunder. When the thunder blasted, they thought it was God speaking or the gods. That essence of a... Yeah, just basic bog, what McLuhan called the acoustic swamp, the acoustic bob is paranoid, very paranoid. We have retrieved that for many people. They accept the fact that the democracy or them being protected by the government or the Justice Department is not true. When push comes to shove, you will not be protected. And Catherine Austin Fitz says that. There are those two parts, two rights among citizens. Those that have the right to kill you and those that don't. And the elites, what Coker would call the virtuals, they have the right to kill the provincials, who are your average guys living in your countries and suffering under high taxation. The provincials,
right.
And among the provincials, they know the virtuals can kill them. And that's daily fare on the TV shows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It boggles my mind all the time, the disconnect and then the level in which, in a sense, there isn't a disconnect and people understand that, you know, the disconnect between the sort of real journalism world and then the constant TV/movies world that's just much more frankly realistic about how the agencies just run roughshod over everything and somehow we can't admit that in a more serious journalistic sense. We have to pretend that these things are all just movie fantasy and that maybe there's some of that going on, but not much.
Not much.
It's just dealt with very frankly in the sort of in the narrative fiction world.
Yeah. Many of the TV shows are like that. So journalism keeps the meme. And this is the newspaper LaRouche quadrant on my chart. They keep the meme going that there's some new information going to be discovered that may enlighten you, liberate you. They think they keep the illusion going that there's sender-receiver transmission can happen. That is actually important information that will topple everything. And they're ignoring the tetraed management by the Android meme or by the Secret Services of, no, you have no rights when you... by being born here under these conditions, they would quote McLuhan, under Android mean conditions, paranoia is total awareness. They would quote Charlie Manson. So the Patriot Bill came in as part of the mythical majority, the sound majority would accept it. You know? And so Ian goes on about, is there any particular psychic solution for if one is afraid of being tromped on by the national security agencies? Is it, what would you say, Ion? The drops?
Craft your own obituary.
Right. Go invisible. McLuhan used to say change your name, but actually say that you are gone. That's an interesting point.
But anyway, Brian, needs a piece of paper, and then you're not here anymore. The bank will even give you your money out of the account.
You're a little muffled. Did you say that? The banks do what?
Will they even give you the money out of the account?
They will even give you the money
out of your account?
At what point? Before you
sign off? Death.
What? Okay.
With
the they will give you the money. If you give them, if somebody gives them a death certificate, they have access to your money?
They'll give you your money.
Yes, if you're dead?
Yes.
You're not explaining. So you can walk in with a fake obituary and say, look, I fake my death, give me my money. No. So what are you saying? That's the best way it is, Ian. Come on, let's get a little more precise here.
Well, at first, when you put
the death certificate, they'll close the account.
Right, and who gets the money?
Whoever hands in the death certificate or the account.
Oh, okay. All right, there's the point. Whoever hands in the death certificate, they assume, knew the guy, the person. All right, thank you. We got clarified. What'd you say, Brian?
Well, I was going to say that when Ion first said craft your own obituary as a strategy or response, that I first took that to mean a kind of a, like, if ultimately what you're afraid of is that if you try to do something or come up with a real solution, that they're just going to kill you. So that there's the only solution or the way to assuage your fear of that is to try to preemptively take control of the meaning of your death, something, so that you're not just caught off guard by being dead and leaving it up to other people to figure out or to not figure out why you were killed or something. So in advance, you craft your own obituary that I was killed by these people for the genius invention I came up with, which is not a problem you're not allowed to solve, you know, to make sure that it's not just, oh, I got caught off guard by being killed and no one knows why I was killed and everyone's too timid to believe I was rubbed out. And
okay. Hey, Ion, do you recommend you state your suspicions about who killed you in your obit? Or is that
oh no!
Fake?
You say you were thoroughly murdered, and it's all proven in the Quoker Quadrant.
Okay, all right. Next quote, Brian.
Next quote
idea.
Well, let's see. What do we got here? The I was reminded of that was an interesting. I liked that quote the clip you had of McLuhan talking about the whodunit is like a I done it or
yes.
Who done it, reader. The author did it or the reader did it or something.
And, you know, when you listen to that, Brian, you have to realize how much we were merged with the electric fusion and that there was no possibility for the chemical body to distinguish itself from any other body. So nobody did anything because there's no private identity to say you're more of a causative agent than someone else. So the whole mash of people, the merged electrified discarnate condition or membrane causes it. And that's why McLuhan said in 68, must we continue to mow down the Kennedys after Robert Kennedy died? And that's what's so great about this quote. He actually spells it out, why you cannot have, you're not guilty. But if you want to create a scene, claim you did it. You know, it's just as valid as any legal thing trying to find someone else. So the more you understand that, that's how merged we are electrically, and that's why Rai returned to plane of essence in 67. It's amazing how cosmic awareness, with their very fringe statement about original separateness had merged with the plane of essence, technically was what McLuhan was noticing. He really deeply perceived how there was no personal identity in any way. On your body level, you had merged completely.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I mean, okay. We shot Tupac. Okay, we didn't kill him. We just shot him.
Who did you do that to? Oh, just... yeah. So ION claims they do everything. They're behind a lot of stuff. That's you've been caught out by McLuhan, ION. You're just playing the McLuhan game, claiming you caused it, and you're not even here.
It was just a misunderstanding. It wasn't serious.
Yes, McLuhan never realized that non-physical would, in the end, take the hit. He just thought we'd wander around. And somebody, I came up with it, but I might have been influenced by somebody, said shame took over from guilt. So, ION, if
that's
guilt...
That's just when you bust a cap up in the ass.
Can you change your phone a bit there, ION? It's garbly. What did he say, Carolyn? Change the app up.
That's when you bust a cap up in their ass.
Right. Is that slang from some part of the world?
It's from Georgia.
It's the old West, shoot 'em up, Bob. Shoot 'em up.
Oh, okay. All right. So, you got anything to say about that, Carolyn? Can you follow that up?
No, but I agree. There's something growly about your phone reception right now, ION.
Yeah, if you can improve it somehow. Well, I don't know where we got. So what? ION's claiming, I was trying to say that non-physical claims they're behind everything. And they could because they are not subject to the electric environment.
Right.
See, that's why ION had to show up. Nothing else existed. There was the last thing that humans created that was still around was non-physical. It had to take over the microphone.
So we've gotten stretched and extended into nothing.
Extended and merged. You have to understand there's no...
Yeah.
This space we're on right now, there are no chemical body dimensions to it.
Right.
And to profoundly realize that means that we're only left with what ION says we originally created, non-physical. So, ION, is that true that you had to come forth because our electric environment peeled away the layers of the onion?
More than likely, yes.
Ah, there's a good profundity
and
there.
And that's the veil. I mean, that.
Yes, the veil's being lifted.
That, yeah, that's the electric lifting of the veil. So then everybody becomes violent because they're trying to get back their identity that they've lost.
Or forge a new identity. Either way,
mm-hmm.
They get
but
violent.
Violence for sure.
Yes, Finnegan says on the chat line, inflation is the beat of the beast. If you consider visual space the beast and the old top-down Big Brother structure, but it's best not to consider them the beast. We understand the dilemma of the CIA director, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We understand what they have to, what their problem is, their quadrophenia. And so we're not so judgmental, but most of the citizens are resentful and blame Big Brother. Blame the Illuminati and all this stuff. That's where ION's more mature, and ION-dom is more mature. We understand everybody's involved. We're
and McLuhan
right.
did, too. Why must we continue to mow down the Kennedys?
Well, he didn't blame anybody. He just said, hey, we all can see. We're now collectively conscious, collectively, no unconscious. Can't we see this is the obvious problem? Now let's just turn off TV for a while.
Right. And even back in the 50s and 60s, people would blame McLuhan for not taking a stand about the war and
right.
the parkway and the subway.
Well, he actually did take a stand on the speedway coming into Toronto because it was going to knock over his home.
Right. He ruined Toronto, yep. actually. Now they've got so much traffic congestion.
Did you know that, Brian? Nelson used to claim that Marshall ruined Toronto because they didn't let the expressway in, the Spadina Expressway, and that had you have incredible traffic problems there now. Did you know that?
No, but that's saving Toronto. I mean, that just ruins Toronto for people that are in their calf and coffin cars.
Yes, their cars, calf and coffin. That's the Ninth Thunder, Finnegan's Wake. Very good there, Brian.
It has definitely saved Toronto for someone who doesn't have a car and lived in the annex. And I was, like, very pleased that Spadina Expressway didn't come through and ruin the goddamn neighborhood.
So that's pretty good. So, yeah, all those who are not yuppies and who are on unemployment and welfare and have no money, McLuhan was working for them.
Yeah, you can still ride around on bicycles. We used to ride bicycles.
Now, this is an important point. Eric said, his son said, that the name Marshall or McLuhan had the same meaning as Mao Zedong. So, really, said that in an interview in 1980 when they're wondering if they called him Son of Guru if he could take over the coach house as it was being closed. So Son of Guru pointed this out. And so Marshall began the long march of media ecology, and he was working for the what Coker calls the abject, the dispossessed, the nobodies, the unemployed.
Because he knew the wall would be ripped down if he didn't.
Which wall?
Well, think of all the walls here at the wall. The wall in Jersey.
No, he knew they'd been ripped down. They knew. He knew they'd all been ripped down. That, okay, Ian, did McLuhan understand the discarnate merging and that the veils were being lifted? Did he criticize the Pope from that position? He understood what had happened to consciousness?
It was Nebuchadnezzar and the Wailing Wall is where it all stemmed from.
Oh, yeah. Nebuchadnezzar. I know him. And so you mean that's what stems from there?
Everything.
Well, under electric conditions, when everything causes everything, you can say anything causes everything. That's another part. That's where Joyce knew that. Did you know that, Ion? Everything causes everything. You can name anything. McLuhan used to say, plots for every man. Any plot you want. You agree with that?
So that's why Walter Winchell had the gizgasm, we're sure.
Yes. Yeah. Walter had a tough time later when TV came in. He wasn't sure what to do. He couldn't be a hot voice anymore. He had to be cool, and he didn't know how to do that. So who? Hedda Hopper took over? Or who took over from that?
William R. Murrow.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. Murrow went after, in the TV era, he went after McCarthy. That's right. Very good.
But I'm saying, Bob, the Berlin Wall didn't come down till 1989, and McLuhan was...
Well, he predicted that. Edward Murrow, unless his middle name is William. You want to look that up, check eye on that. Okay, 1970, McLuhan said that Berlin Wall, the separateness of the Communist Bloc, would not be possible. When Mary McLuhan was holding her awards in Ottawa or someplace, and Brian Mulroney came, Prime Minister of Canada. Well, Nelson or somebody read the quote, and Mulroney said to Nelson, wow, after the award ceremony, he said, wow, if I'd known that, I would have started reading McLuhan a long time ago, because the wall was just coming down. And
nice.
He, what, Ion?
Well, that was just me saying nice.
Yes. Old Mulroney was forced to look at the new percept, as if he didn't know.
And what do you want to know about Murrow?
What's his name? Full name?
Edward R. Murrow.
So Ion talking about setting himself up to be ridiculed by calling him William Murrow probably has a good reason to call him William. Now, what is that, Ion? What's your alibi?
That was his name.
Well, not according to the wiki. Sorry, we're using the wiki, but. Edward R. Murrow. So there's no William in the biography there, Carolyn.
No, I'm looking William. No, not so far, but who knows?
Well, Ian can talk about there's many Murrows. We don't know
here,
which
Murrow recruited journalist William L. Shire to take a similar post on the continent. That's the William that comes up.
Yeah, William Shire. Maybe so. It was a combination of William and Murrow. McLuhan's talking about how William, he went on to write books. I remember William Shire. And Ian, is your alibi that it's a corporate combination between Murrow and Shearer? So you get William Murrow? You like that? I'm giving you an alibi.
Giving you an
out,
yeah.
Giving you an
out,
Ian.
No alibi required. No alibi required.
Well, are there more than one Edward Murrow, you know? Are you talking about the other Edward Murrow? Can you bring that kind of thinking into this?
We're talking about William R. Murrow.
What'd you say?
We're referring to William Murrow.
Okay, let me look up William Murrow.
Well, did he have any connection to Edward Murrow?
No.
So I made the mistake of assuming it was Edward Murrow that you were talking about. Where did William Murrow, did he have a public image? Was he known to contribute in the information world publicly? Ion.
Owning the airwaves. Owning the airwaves.
Ah, Murrow owned the airwaves. He took over from Sarnoff.
Right?
Wasn't... Dude, there it is. Okay, so there's an owner. So you got to go to CBS, NBC, look for the oligarchy. So it wasn't Edward Murrow. So there, the bankers went in and bought up the software environment.
Mm-hmm. They controlled it behind the scenes.
Tried to control it. So
yeah, it's uncontrollable, right?
Well, that's what Joyce celebrated. Anarchy is us. Anarchy is us. So, Brian, next point you might want to bring in, something separate.
Let's see. Right. McLuhan talked somewhere about Kennedy mentioned about fire is the most basic or the best basic metaphor for a crowd.
Fire is, or to shout fire, do you mean?
Oh no, that was the little joke or point that McLuhan made. But Kennedy talked about that fire is the best metaphor for the growth of a crowd, just the spread of fire.
Oh, okay.
And also that fire is kind of the best way to catch people's attention to grow a crowd. You know, like if you have a big, giant bonfire, you get people around it.
Yeah, do you remember what McLuhan said about that? He said cop told Tony Schwartz, and he passed on to McLuhan, and McLuhan used it in the documentary or the TV show on him in NBC in 1967. He said that if you say help, you're in trouble in the streets of New York, you won't be assisted. But if you say fire, the person doesn't feel like they're going to get directly involved with you. It's more of a collective problem. They will come.
Exactly.
So if you ever get in trouble, yell fire. Don't yell help.
No, that's what McLuhan wrote
especially,
in the book.
Especially in a crowded theater.
Yes.
Yeah, someone's groping you in the theater, and you yell fire instead of help. Yeah, but that's exactly what McLuhan wrote in the book. Next to where Kennedy is talking about fire as a metaphor of the growth of the crowd, McLuhan writes help versus fire.
Yeah, see, if
so
you know McLuhan's
talking about fire can grow a crowd, and help just makes people want to not get involved.
Yeah, so if you're an expert on McLuhan like me, you can anticipate what he's going to write in the book. Because he has routines. He's like a comedian. He has joke number five, you know? So it's formulaic how he responds to things.
Right.
And he writes
Bob put the pickle in the brine before they ever invented the hamburger to put it on.
Yep, that's right, 1911. I set up McLuhan's birth. 1911. I was functioning then, apparently, Brian, one of my better selves. And,
it's actually Korean. It's where it all got nasty.
He says that every week. Every time, I wonder if any of the children ever hear Ion talking about Korean. Yes, Korean. That's at 4. I'll make a note, 420. So the fire thing, the formulaic, if you look up interior landscape, Brian, and look up the essay on Wyndham Lewis, McLuhan talks about the formulaic there, how the modern scientist is formulaic and the artist is cooler, like Joyce and Lewis, because they know it's science is formulaic, but they put in the effects and causes. They see through that, the knee-jerk response to formula, to the formulaic demand of the icon of the scientist in public. So that's also corporate expression. That's why art would not be self-expression. It's corporate expression.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a joke, about an hour ago, on the chat line, I yelled fire.
Yeah.
So I did that because we have a firewoman in the audience who had just communicated, and she was pooped all day because she had done a fire drill. So I yelled out, fire! Run! And she posted, Bob, you're always on fire. So I couldn't fool the professional, and the joke was killed pretty quickly, or the ruse. That happened. Now we're talking about fire.
Yeah.
Augmenter puts in Egbert Roscoe Murrow. E.R. Murrow. Egbert Roscoe Egbert. Murrow.
Yeah. Well. Egbert.
Okay, next point, Brian.
Next point.
Wheels on fire, rolling down the road.
Yes, we played that during Bop Fest. Yes,
we know. We like it.
Yeah, we'll see if we can find that and play that.
Yeah, an old song that goes like
it's
that?
In the Vestal, it's in the Vestal section.
Right, but it is a song that Dylan did. I assume Dylan wrote it. And then this later religious group did it.
Okay.
Bill Gaither or somebody like that, you know. One of the Gaither people.
Just a few years ago, Neil Young did a really good cover of that song that I had the privilege of hearing in the mixing desk quality, because the guy who had produced these some covers of, who had recorded Neil Young and some of these covers, also recorded my band's album. And so when we were there in his studio recording it down, he was like, here, let me play you this fantastic thing I've been working on mixing that I recorded with Neil Young, This Wheel's on Fire. And he did a really good version of it.
Well, you
recommend
know,
that if anyone comes across it. Good.
Yes. Now, Neil Young, I heard in one of his famous songs, he says, you know, he came from, you know, the boondocks of the province of Ontario or something. And he says, that's where all my changes were made. So the guy was totally conditioned to do well in the youth market because he only relied on the insights he got as a teenager. He never made any changes after that. He never learned anything. But he made millions relying on the changes he had done in Ontario.
That would explain why these days his extra musical activities are all about cars and sound systems.
Right. Always, he doesn't like the virtual music. He's vinyl oriented, isn't he? Something like that.
Well, he's trying to improve digital music. Rightly he's very disappointed in the sound quality of MP3s, and so he's been trying to work on an alternative that can be a digital music format that doesn't lose all the richness, that basically has a vinyl kind of level of richness, but that can still be digitally shared and transmitted. And he calls it Pono.
Right. Okay, Ian, are the young kids coming in, are they missing out from the sound experience, not hearing vinyl? Or are they mutated and don't care about that level? Let's see if Ian's still here. You're still here. Ian, can you explain the aesthetics? Are the kids missing out if they've totally merged with the new digital environment? Is it just an old-timer thing? Well, it looks like Ian's not going to be able to say anything right now. He's not speaking. He's still listening
not
here.
That's too bad. About this whole, ever since it was brought up about you saying that ION or non-physical had to come forward, I've just been thinking about that issue of had to come forward and what coming forward means in that sense of like of just of cohering in a face and a mouth. I mean, whether or not we see ION's face, it's still like it's a localized, it's a coherent, stable source of, you know, a personality or words coming out from one source, that organized, coherent locus, focus of thought or of communication. It's interesting, this idea that we've been so merged into this electronic seamlessness that seems to be, that's a condition that totally thwarts exactly that
expression, yes.
That organizing into a single mouth or whatever, and
yeah,
like the Matrix kind of dramatized that when he goes to talk to the Matrix itself, and it builds this fake sort of the swarming sentinels that, like, it's like the fate of the distributed intelligence itself.
Yes.
Like, organizing into a face. It's interesting, like, definitely, I mean, if that's an accurate description of what happened, then it's definitely a miracle, this idea that that had to come forth, that we deserve that somehow, that it's not just doom that we were stuck in this electronic mergedness of distributed responsibility and everybody done it and you done it and there's no... the greater it done it, was able to actually grow a mouth and start talking.
Yes. No, that's really important. Our physical had been subsumed by a new physicality, the discarnate physicality, and Ion said they had to leave the non-physical, where you couldn't be creative, and come forth and be physical and speak. So none of us could speak, so... Ion does talk about the chip body merging with the chemical body, and then the mystery body, which is Ion, coming in there. He talks about not the astral body, the TV body. He just says the chip body will merge with the chemical body. Well, that's what Ion did. He brought in the mystery body and took over the role of the chemical body.
Hmm.
And this is what Thiel's book's about, Beyond the Word. You know, that's the condition that Finney's Wake was the first to really spell out. We were beyond the word. And then most of communication today is nostalgia for human logocentric mouth activity. So none of it can take any responsibility in the end. I just saw that movie Kill the Messenger about Gary Webb, who exposed the Contras and drug network and CIA. In the end... Yeah. The battle comes down to, well, if you say that, then that'll become part of the microphone out of the White House, and we can't accept that. So power is fighting over the old medium, and that's the last gasp of Big Brother. The White House gets the word that makes a market, gets to say what is, even though none of it has any staying power. That position of power doesn't work anymore, which is what Cosmic Awareness said. Power was obsolesced in the late 60s. All kinds of power, and now it's the afterimage of speech.
Yeah.
And Baudrillard and them, they go on and on about this, but they should have overlapped with Cosmic Awareness, brought in a bit of that so they wouldn't be so isolated from the New Age meme.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, they take a position on who their audience is. You'll never see Croker over here interacting with Ion. You know, and that's a limitation. I have the guts to do this, but
absolutely. Whether they're dictating it or just accepting it and going along with it, this limitation of who their audience is.
Yeah, limiting their audience.
Problem. This was a major focus of my thinking for a while, a few years ago, of just feeling like that the thing that just needed to be done was just some cross-pollination of audiences.
Yeah.
Like what we need is for McLuhan and Baudrillard to be considered authorities in the conspiracy and chaos magic spheres.
Yeah.
No, not in their own
spheres. Implied empathy.
Implied empathy, right. Ian, can you go back and answer what was my question, Carolyn? That Ian didn't answer. Anybody remember? Man, nobody remembers Ian. What the heck was it?
About how we couldn't talk and we weren't going to talk about not talking, so we weren't going to talk. You were talking about how non-physical doesn't talk, so we weren't talking, and we're still not talking, because we're not talking about not talking, because we don't talk. We can't talk about talking. We don't talk about talking. We don't care what you think about talking. We don't even talk about talking. The talking doesn't talk right. The talker doesn't talk good, and then they'll talk well, speak well, not good, hear that, over, under. Can't do it. Not going to do it. Not going to have it.
That was close. That's overreacting. But no. What was the point, Brian? Like, it was a good question. Like, what? Non-physical coming forth and speaking, but there was.
Yeah, but I think I changed it back to that. I don't think that's what you asked when I didn't answer.
Ion, did you come forth to replace? No, you just said you didn't, but you have come forth to speak, to replace our mouths. So substitute for our mouths? Can you vibrate about that? I won't say speak or talk. In English. Do you vibrate in English, Ion? That's McLuhan, HMM. You know, Brian, Ian is such a knowledgeable McLuhan scholar, he'll throw in the every now and then. If you don't know he's referring to HMM, you're out of it. You don't get the art of Ion.
Yeah, he's doing the electric grape.
Yes, yes. Why does the grape, what is the, why
what's
does the grape hum?
I think it's just what's purple and hums.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you say the grape, but then why does it hum? Because it doesn't know the words.
Why does it hum? Because speech is obsolete.
Yeah. And the joke version, that's what McLuhan said, and then the joke version in the popular culture was it doesn't know the words. So, Ian, are we going to retrieve speech ever? Do the ascended people speak verbally, other than for power reasons? Do they engage in social mortar at all? What's your problem, Ian? If you're going to be here, contribute. I think these moral stances, be lazy. Don't stick to your principles so adamantly.
Or is it just like the last few decades where speech becomes a rhythmic crowd entertainment thing of speaking in a rhythmic rhyme? No, doesn't matter what you're speaking as long as it's done in a fat bounce.
Yeah, that's hip-hop.
Party going.
That's hip-hop.
Yeah.
And they were right to say, hey, we're just describing our life. We're not out to kill people. But they knew that that would be the best stuff to talk about if you're going to use obsolete speech, use that imagery. Violence sells, right? So, Brian, is there a point in Kennedy that resonates with this microphone talk?
Well, I guess not right off the top of my head, other than the point that I brought up the first time I was mentioning Kennedy when that McLuhan wrote Medium versus Message beside the part where Kennedy describes a sermon and people imagining that it was the content of the sermon that inspired them when, in fact, it was the fact that they were hearing the sermon along with a whole crowd of people.
Right. The emotion of multitude.
Yeah. So.
Do you think the chip body, do you think Web 2.0 and Facebook retrieved the emotion of multitude, which might have been knocked out in Web 1.0?
Kennedy spaghetti. It was linguine.
That's very helpful, Ion. Yeah, for the serialistic team. What did he say? Kennedy spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
You want to ask Ian some questions, Carol? No. Wait, we got to finish with Brian. Okay. So, Brian, come up with some other points about McLuhan. And
well, there was a curious note that I wonder if you can shed some speech on or something. After a section where he's discussing the way that churches consolidate their crowds, that there might be an initial fast growth of a crowd around some charismatic leader, but ultimately when they're in it for the long haul, they grow only much more carefully, and they don't really want to be growing quickly anymore because that's too dangerous. They want to be growing, but it's more about more of the effort is going into maintaining the ritual dosing of crowd feeling, like once a day or something.
Yeah, Weber, I think, called it the routinization of charisma.
Yeah, that would be the perfect phrase for it.
Yeah.
After, while in the context of discussing this, that the church moves from a fast-growing open crowd to a closed crowd that still wants to grow but only slowly, there's a sentence that McLuhan underlined, all suddenly prohibited religions revenge themselves by a kind of secularization. And beside that, McLuhan wrote that too, for Vatican II, and black power.
Yes.
So, he saw some connection between Vatican II and black power there, and I wonder what he meant by that note.
That's tribalism. McLuhan didn't mean that we were all becoming tribalism as a retrieved desirable condition. It was a fallback, knee-jerk reflex, basically why Don Field says we're not in an oral visual debate. We're in a tactile kinetic debate. So Walter Ong and these guys that said we have secondary orality through the media. The secondary orality that the Black Power and the Vatican were doing was the bureaucratization of their tribal identity as a reaction to the merged state where you couldn't have an identity. So any kind of organizing an image and chemical bodies around an icon from the Vatican to Black Power is a rear-view mirror response to the discarnate tactile environment.
Yeah.
Tribalism is the content. It's what people can have a sense of control by having hands-on management of bureaucratizing their tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And that took over. That's called political correctness or the group mind. That took over for 40 years. But Web 2.0...
Tribalism works great as long as you got a tribe.
We don't have tribes. What people didn't see with the Internet, that it was not a tribal phenomenon. It was a super virtual self, super angel, creating their own spaces, very godlike in the technical world. And therefore, moral majority, all the groups, tribal groups, including the Vatican, have no way to regain iconicity in Web 2.0. It's just everybody creating their own spaces now. And ION's ideology, to the degree it has, resonates with that, explains that, counters that, plays off that. That's what the right wing, the left wing, the middle wing, they didn't foresee that. But McLuhan did. He actually did foresee the personalizing and retrieving of a virtual private identity under the new computer world. He says that in an interview in the late 80s,
West Wing, mostly.
I never saw that show, but what happened in West Wing? Anybody know? I mean, it's the White House, but...
Yeah, I never saw it either.
Are you talking about
The series, TV series. You
yeah.
know
how
yeah,
I know
loves
it.
That.
Well, I never heard Ian talk about it, but... We have.
He loved the president, the female president.
No, he liked someone else in there.
Yep.
The aide. So, Ian, is West Wing, what is that? The show about trying to be a tribal image but not being able to do it?
Not the show. It's just another wing you were referring to.
Oh, okay. The West Wing is the West, world, Western Hemisphere.
No, it's a specifically part of the White House.
Yes, I know that. And what is that part? Is that where they live? Domestically, privately, or is that where the offices are and the business takes place? What's in the West Wing? Anybody know?
That's the business end of the stick, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So
it's not the White House that Ion's talking about. He's talking about the West Wing of the world?
No, he's talking about the West Wing and the White House.
Ion?
Yeah, that's what he's talking about. And we were asking about what goes on there. Google what the use of the West Wing is.
There's a cafeteria.
Yeah, see, it's not the domestic private quarters part.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it's really important that, you, Carolyn, even in your medicine, you didn't take the group effect. You didn't try to become head of the doctor's union or assume some mantle within the tribalization of medicine. You went for the individual route, which was the best way to do it. By speaking and appealing to the individual who was gradually becoming a super angel. Now they're over-informed, these patients, too informed.
So it says West Wing is the executive office building, houses the offices of the president, contains the Oval Office.
Okay, so that's the bureaucratization. That's the bureaucracy, Brian. That's the bureaucratization of an image, of an icon.
Chief of staff, counselors, senior advisors.
See, Obama could act out his presidential role a lot better if he just had dialogues. Every few days, just get on with somebody and have a 10-minute dialogue. That's what McLuhan said. That's how they should run elections. Just get on there and talk and see how the person can interact with spontaneous, improvised dialogue, not running around for obsolete platforms.
Well, so, yeah, that is the kind of thing that would sort of create more currency among people being surprised at, like, oh, this seems like a, you know, interesting kind of politician I could get behind or something.
Yeah.
It's proving themselves in just dialogue rather than winning support of big tribes.
That's right. It would be the chemical body, human scale, retrieving the chemical body.
Well, that seems very, and what you were just saying about Carolyn not going for, you know,
the tribal image.
Not going for the apparatus, the tribal apparatus, more individual. That seems very relevant to what you're saying about McLuhan basically taking the standing up for the abject.
Yes.
That point that, like, that is, because that's the condition of the literacy, that's the condition of the individual in this world, is completely shut out of the, you know, as an increasingly obsolete space, but it's also this individual versus the corrupted tribes.
Yeah, right. Now, two thoughts there. The McLuhan, what did you just say, the first part? McLuhan did...
stood up for the abject.
Oh, yeah, the abject. That's the silent majority. He said they were the dead, the silent dead. That was most of the human beings. And politicians try to appeal to an image of the silent majority. Now, you may not have heard this. McLuhan was explaining that, or Ted Carpenter brought this up in the late 60s. He said that professors were leaving the universities because it was too bureaucratic. But the dropout, the student dropout, was retrieving literacy. And there was the audience for William Burroughs and all the color culture heroes like Thomas Pynchon. They were the ones reading books, Carpenter was saying, in the late 60s. So you had the semi-literate dropouts hoiking up the book industry while the professors who taught literary knowledge were going for corporate post-literate roles in labs or
consulting. Furry Lent and the immoral majority.
Well, yeah, the silent majority is in reference to public issues. McLuhan pointed out that everybody had to be politically correct and wear that on their sleeve. But personally, nobody was living ethically anymore. And so,
immoral majority.
Yes, that's actually the hidden ground of the silent majority. The silent majority is the public face. The immoral majority is the dope-smoking average citizen, four married,
Barry Lynn.
Fucked up.
Barry Lynn.
Larry Flint. Okay, Larry Flint and the immoral majority. You get that, Brian?
For sure.
No,
yeah,
that's perceptive, and McLuhan wrote about that. This is the thing, is that a lot of what Ion says, other than the most esoteric things that humans never knew, more and more, reading Don Thiel and McLuhan and hearing these recordings we're playing, they were right on the ball about at least public ways of talking about the situation that Ion represented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I may have the lost unedited version of the first three chapters of the Book of Revelation that we did. Sky Goddess Sue found it, and I'm listening to it. I haven't decided whether it is. It seems to be different from what we offer, which is the edited version. But in that, Ion keeps talking. This is the first night talking about the Book of Revelation, talking about we've adopted the McLuhan approach, which means they could have another approach. But we didn't realize right then what that meant. But it meant by chapter 12 and 13 that Ion was saying the printing press really did people in. It was the Dark Ages.
Is that the one where you put out a hit on Ed?
Yes, that was in the first. And I'm looking. I'll know it's the correct unedited if the argument I had with Ed is still on there. And I haven't found it yet. But Sue thinks it's in the first half hour, and I didn't play the first half hour. So we're going, and I can't get it off my email, so we're going to play it, broadcast it, an hour and a half, and then we'll all have access to download it. and then we could notice it. I mean, Ion brings up McLuhan several times. And I think, Ion, you were responding to our argument. You were making statements after we had our argument.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Oh. Okay, good. That sounds great.
Yeah, Ion will not get personal. McLuhan, in the first, I'm just speaking out loud as I write notes. Go ahead with the next point. So, Brian, see, you're part of that counterculture. I see you as someone reading a lot of these books where you're reading the books written by the guys who provided books for the dropouts in the late 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
We don't get personal. We get physical.
Yes, that's right. That's true. You get rough. What's interesting is that the poets, starting from the Romantics, which were the first symbolists, and then there was the second symbolist, they were largely seen as upsetting, attacking the literate bias of the scientists, and advocated return to the wilds, the sublime of nature, and these non-literary environments. So when you get the satellite goes on around the planet in the 50s and 60s, everybody has to become their opposite. The east goes west, the west goes east, the north goes south. The blacks demand civil rights, and the civil rights lawyers go non-civil rights and go Patriot Bill. So here you have the counterculture, which is basically retrieving acoustic space values, went visual in the late 60s. They became their opposite. See what I mean, Brian?
Yeah. Yeah,
and they complained about the takeover of disco and the population being numbed out by, you know, William, what's that guy's name? Wee Willie, Waylon Jennings, Waylon.
Waylon Jennings.
Yeah, who's the guy who lives here? Willie Dixon.
Willie Nelson.
Yeah, Willie Nelson. You know, these dope smoking Luckenbach guys that become public heroes, even in the rock world. That whole acoustic space. Was attacked by Lester Bangs. Lester Bangs represented the writerly.
Mm.
The new hipness was to be writerly.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's something about that.
Yeah, and Ted Carpenter called it.
And it seems relevant to what you were kind of starting to say there, that, like, at first those romantic poets or whatever that they were originally, they were seen as a, you know, they were basically a revolt against the kind of properly literate or the...
And the Newtonian world.
And then they end up becoming the kind of icon of literacy of, like, you know, that if you're going to go to university and learn English and be a cultured whatever, then you're going to be, they're the establishment poet.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting, Joyce and them, the vortices, They were the last gasp of anti-book or anti-numbskull literacy. The ones that read Finnegan's Wake didn't take the apparent acoustic bias of the Wake and Pound and Eliot. They adopted the visual bias as a probe, as an anti-environment, unconsciously. So now how can bring that into the Church of Subgenius? They, that's what am I seen as in relation to that? Am I seen as a literary person? Not really.
In the sense of, like, that, you know, that, like you were saying last time of Help Hope Huey, like, I don't know what he sees in this, whatever that
well,
is.
Well, literary, okay, I'm seen as a literary critic. They've actually, one guy, some smarter subgenius said, Bob's just a literary critic guy. That's all he talks about.
No, they just think you're a know-it-all.
Yes, and that would be oracular. That would be oral condition, auditory. But it's actually tactile put on. But they somehow hoik up literary values, Brian. I'm saying that they're graphic artists, a lot of them, but they hoik, they're part of the counterculture of retrieved visual space. That explains what their hang-up is.
Yeah.
They do not want you parroting and being a tribal zombie. Their whole thing is against that. Okay, Ion has dropped off. I want to just see what Corbyn has to say. If he has anything sane to say about what we're talking about, Corbyn. Corbyn just dropped off. I just asked him to come forward, and he dropped off. Okay, there's one person here, 703. Who's that?
Randy.
Ah, Randy. Okay, Randy, no giggling.
Oh, man, I'm barely here. I just started listening. Sorry about that.
No, you've been here 10 minutes. I see your number. You've been here. You've heard words.
Yeah, but I've forgotten what they are already.
Well, okay, what would you, well, you've, what idea, do you have any ideas in your head at all about anything?
Yeah, a lot of paranoia.
Okay, what's the latest in the paranoid world? What's your Facebook page paranoid about, your team?
Oh, not Facebook. I've been watching a lot of YouTube. I came across this weird video called Illumicore.
Okay.
It's like this, it's like, it looks like the Illuminati put this together, and it says, if you want to join the Illuminati and welcome to our organization, and it's just, it's really dark, but it looks like it's a farce, but it's very weird. Anyway, I've just been listening to a lot about the Draconians and the Archons and all kinds of good stuff. Why? Because it's entertaining. It entertains me.
But then it makes you paranoid?
Only occasionally.
Yeah, see here, Randy, you're a semi-educated, not sophisticated, educated, literate person. And you guys, your meme is this titillating stuff. A visual space. It's extreme writing, extreme visual space, like David Icke.
Yes.
And you guys enjoy that. It's the only way you'll tolerate visual space. It's got to be outlandish. You're not into the facts anymore. You're into how much you can get frightened. Well, I suggest that the vortices and what I talk about are another way of getting your thrills, of getting frightened.
What is that? I didn't hear you.
Finnegan's Wake, the vortices, Finnegan's Wake, Ezra Pound, Eliot, Wyndham Lewis, and then my holy office is LaRouche or Zappa. They're ways of getting the thrills without going into obvious visual space mania or absurdities or extremities. So you're into a kind of metaphysical pornography, and you're missing the pornography that McLuhan offers, a new kind of pornography. The perceptual thing. And ION, you're here because of ION, supposedly. ION is part of the new kind of pornography, exposing the most mysterious landscapes ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, Baudrillard wrote about that everything would be exposed, and he called this obscenity. Everything would become obscene, and he objected to it or pretended to object to it. I just think you guys should branch out. The new literacy, the new consumer choice, Randy, for your type of mind is what we're offering.
I listen to this show. I have for 3 years.
I know, but you have nothing to say. You don't contribute anything to it. You don't offer porn. You just offer your laziness of watching B-level porn of Illumicore and David Icke stuff. You know, I'm saying that we're trying to get you to see the porn we're offering.
Okay.
Because what you're going through is addictive.
It is.
It's a limited meme. It's all that you're interested in, but you keep thinking that is all the only way it can be done by this David Icke spinoff. I mean, actually, there's no bad news equal to the good news that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And people usually don't like good news, but that means that good news is the new porn, the new shock.
Yeah. Well, and I don't have the fear like I used to, because being an item and stuff, I do feel powerful and... So it doesn't affect me in the way that it used to. It's just more for, it's just entertaining and fun.
Well, I call that the TV body. You work all day being very interactive on the chip body, and you're creating there, and then where's your oats? You go home and sit on the couch and let yourself be entertained, and you receive information, even though none of it's significant. You're doing that with the fringe
uh-huh.
stuff. I'm trying to get people to see there's other ways to titillate that one wouldn't expect. I mean, this is what Brian's doing. Brian's going and reading McLuhan's annotations as a relaxing rearview mirror hobby. You know, he's going and looking at the annotations. Now, you on the surface would never want to do that. But you actually can find out whatever you get titillated by the David Icke world. You can get titillated by this, the uncanny world that McLuhan's exploring.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to go against my bias and just try and go ahead and experiment like you suggesting.
Yeah, go to the McLuhan audios. On the farm. The latest are posted right there. And listen to McLuhan saying things that are so extreme that people don't even recognize how extreme they are. Wouldn't you say, Brian? McLuhan wasn't even noticed as how whack job he was.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was, even though that was part of his image, it wasn't really, you know, where, like, people would, what they ultimately would settle down to accuse him of was really very small potatoes compared to how extreme he actually was.
Right. And we got Roxanne and Ian here. That's an interesting combination. So Ian's back. What am I trying to tell Randy, Ian? You have anything to add to that, Ian?
She just sees it the way she sees it, and she's going to see it that way. So see it that way until you don't.
Right. So I'm going to tease her and try to get her to the not phase, because why should I just go along with it? You know, I can be pleasant, but we're not trying to be that here. We're trying to be challenging.
If she has enough of Carolyn's sea salt, we can touch in small enough pieces, she can just eat you. All right.
Okay, so
that would be challenging. That would be challenging, wouldn't it?
No, she can't get to me. She can't eat me.
Oh.
That's true. Yeah. I don't fall for the O.
We'll put the tech in some tactility for you. Get them clothes on, y'all.
Okay. In other words, you don't have to use your angels to smote me, Randy. You can use Ion to smote me. There's a new service Ion's offering.
Well, so far, I don't have a desire to smote you, Bob, so you're good.
Yeah, nice try, Ion. Nobody's going to go for a popular guy like me.
Connie's behind the scene here.
Yeah, Connie protects me.
She can eat your insight cookie.
Yeah, the insight cookie. What is that? Is that something people buy?
Dun dun dun.
We've got to watch out for Ian and for Roxy. She reviews the material now. She's finding out what Ian actually said last week or the week before by actually re-listening, right, Roxy? So you're bringing up ideas we don't remember. I mean, is that something Ian said? The insight cookie?
No, you said in the last McLuhan-Bach video.
Oh, he offered that? McLuhan offered that phrase?
You say everybody's now addicted to new patterns.
Oh, yeah.
Insights.
Oh, and you're naming, this is your term, insight cookie.
No, it's yours.
Oh, I said that? Okay, now, yes, you may be right. I did say that. Now I'm remembering that. Yes, that was my little take. So
when did you say it?
In passing, I didn't want to just say pattern recognition, so I said little titillation. So I called it a cookie.
Mm.
Like people, well, that's why people monitor the media. They look for insight cookies. Insight.
Well, in the internet, when you go to some sites, they say, "Will you accept my cookies?"
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. So it's all over.
But you know, most people, that's the active part of the chip body. It's a global classroom, and you can't stop people searching, looking for some weirdness. or something, some pattern.
And sometimes if you have too much corn liquor, you toss your cookies.
Yeah. Good pun there. Yeah.